podcast for Wednesday, April the 15th. Happy Tax Day if you are listening in the United States. Actually, there's an extension on Tax Day. I think it's 3 months, maybe even 4 months of taxes due to the coronavirus pandemic. So what are we celebrating today? Not quite sure. But anyway, I am going to celebrate the patrons of the podcast. There's a new one that joined on in the last couple of days. And then within the last couple of weeks, there's actually been four new ones. So let me give some shout outs. So thank you so much to Mike, Charlie, and Todd, and Tara, and Serena, and Victoria, and Chad, Anthony, Jennifer, Eddie, Jenny, Sean, Holly, Christina, Ross, Caroline, Julie, Casey, Alyssa, Brian, Sarah, Adrian, Stan, Kristen, Sarah, Helen, Arnie, Barb, and Kim. Thank you all so much for contributing to the podcast. I will say in the near 3 years that I've been doing this show, this is by far the hardest time to do it right now. Like, for instance, right now, my wife is bathing the kids. The kids just got done in a screaming match down the hall, debating over something, bickering over something, wanting to kill each other. It's close to bedtime, but I am recording this open right now. So thankful that I got so ahead on podcast interviews back in February, because this interview that I did with the person today, Julie O'Brien, is, I think we actually recorded this February 20th-ish. None of the stay-at-home orders were in place. I think that Washington State had the first death that had occurred, and I feel like that was the first real sniff of it here in the United States. So the first person that died of coronavirus in the United States lived 12 miles from my house, 12 miles north. So it's pretty wild, or at least confirmed coronavirus case. And I'm sure that if if more testing for some reason can happen or starts coming back from people that have already passed away, say months ago, there may be more if that ever happens. So I don't know, just a wild, wild time. So this podcast is great, though. Julie and I spent no time talking about this pandemic because it wasn't really a thing at that time. And I messaged her this morning. Let me bring this up. I messaged Julie this morning. You may actually be able to hear the kids in the other room. They're so loud. I had said, hey, is there anything you want me to add or mention? And she had said that she's currently working on a new 12-week program for chronic pain and anxiety, and it's going to be launching in the next month. So towards the end of this episode, we go through how you can find Julie. But she is a wealth of information on Instagram, and you can find her at julieobriencoaching.com. That's J-U-L-I-E-O-B-R-I-E-N coaching. Or at Julie O'Brien Coaching on Instagram. And then she's going to go over where you can find her on the web and different things like that as well. So I hope that you love this interview. I really had a blast talking to her, and I hope we're going to do a part two at some point in the future. Here is Julie. This is the Mind and Fitness Podcast. I am your host, Eddie Lindenstein, and it took the greatest amount of might, but I pulled today's guest from Minnesota. I thawed her out from the freezing, frigid tundra that is the Midwest. And here she is on the phone with me, Julie O'Brien from Julie O'Brien Coaching. Julie, are you there?
I'm here. Thank you so much. Yes, I'm thawing out.
I was imagine like Rose Dawson from Titanic laying on that door in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean, yeah. Just completely frigid.
Yeah, we often feel like that here. We do. Or it might be just me. I'm probably the only one that isn't as fond of winter in Minnesota.
Well, just know that if that ever comes down to it and that truly is you, there's definitely room on that door for Jack to climb on there. And
I just had this discussion with my daughter. Truly. Yes, I agree.
It's always funny when they do that. When they do the, I've seen that. That's one of those. I asked this question on Instagram a couple of years ago. I like doing just like random poll questions and just how are people going to respond. Like as an example, the other day I asked men, when you're standing at a urinal, do you look up or do you look down? And I thought it'd be like 90% one way, but no, it was very close to 50-50. But one of the ones I asked a couple of years ago is, what is one of those movies that every time it's on TV, for some reason, you will always turn it on, even if you've seen it a bazillion times? And for me, Titanic is that movie. And or it's one of those. There's a couple of them that are like that. But Titanic is one of those. And I always just snicker at the end when they're doing the camera pan out and this massive door and Rose is laying on it and Jack's freezing to death. And that's how the story ends.
Yeah, I know. And it's funny because when I watch that movie, I have to stop it before the boat goes down. Because I don't want to see the rest. I just want them to live forever,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So, but it's such a good movie.
Mm-hmm. And usually movies like that inevitably kick me into the Wikipedia black hole where I start I'll start looking at the development of the movie of Titanic, and then I'll get into reading about the Titanic, and then I'll get into reading about shipwrecks, and then I'll get into reading about all these, then I'll somehow get the natural disasters, and then so it's just
a spiral.
Yeah. The internet's a strange place. Okay. So, so this is cool. So I've been following your stuff on Instagram for a long time, which for those of us who have not heard of you, where can people find you on Instagram? Maybe they want to start scrolling as they're kind of listening to this.
Yeah. So my Instagram handle is @JulieO'BrienCoaching.
Awesome. Okay. And so, the website, JulieO'BrienCoaching.com, there's a lot of content that you put out on a very regular basis that, to me feels a little bit more, on a couple different sides. A, it feels a little bit more holistic maybe than a lot of times with the, it's a lot of times I feel like TMS coaches are a little bit maybe more narrow-minded. That's probably not the best term to use, but focus sort of in one way. I almost see you sort of going at this from a few different angles, and I'll give you an example. Right when you go to your website, as an example, there is a healing checklist, and there's a few things in here, and I want to talk. I feel like there will be a few opportunities for us to talk about a variety of these things today, but there's breathe, there's practice believing I can heal. We know about that one. Sarno talks about that one. Release tension in my body. That's something I'm curious to get some of your feedback on. And what is it that you mean? Feel my feelings. We that's repetitive. We kind of all know about that thing. Listen to my body when it needs rest. Similar mm-hmm. messaging. We've heard a lot. Think calming thoughts. Slow down. Visualize myself healed. The thing that jumps out at me here, and at first I want to start about your story in this particular avenue, but to me this is very much like a healing checklist for anxiety is kind of how I read it in a lot of ways.
Yeah, it can come. Yep.
And so let's start with your story though. You battled with a lot of different things for a couple of years. And so how did this stuff start and how long ago did it start?
It's been actually a number of years. I woke up to pain June 6, 2012. So it was a number of years ago. And it's important to share that prior to the onset of pain, I had a routine pelvic surgery in March of 2012. And my recovery from that surgery was really challenging. I hemorrhaged and I was anemic for a few months. So my nervous system was already slightly sensitive due to that difficult recovery. But I did wake June 6, 2012 with pain. And the pain I experienced was, I refer to it as pelvic pain, but specifically it was vaginal and vulvar symptoms. And it, like a lot of women who experience this type of pain, started out feeling like a typical yeast infection. So went to my gynecologist, got tested, treated, but they really never found anything. But they put me on medication anyway. And as the story goes, for just so many women, the medication never worked, so I just kept going back and getting more medication that never worked. So by July, I was starting to look online, and I found vulvodynia and read all these just tragic stories of women in severe suffering for years with the same symptoms that I was experiencing. So emotionally, I was becoming really panicked, like afraid that this was going to be my future. So in July, the gynecologist I was seeing at the time decided to do a biopsy on the tissue, and it came back inconclusive, but the pathology report mentioned the slight possible beginning stage of an autoimmune disorder called lichen sclerosis. And my doctor, really not knowing what else was wrong with me, just decided that this is what I had, even though I wasn't presenting with any physical symptoms of this. And being that I didn't really know what was wrong and I wanted to trust my doctor, right? Like, you are emotionally exhausted. And I reluctantly just went ahead with the treatment, which was super aggressive. The treatment is super strong topical steroids. You're talking steroids that are 600 times stronger than what you would normally get, like over the counter at target.
Yeah.
And they made me 10 times worse. So by this time, the pain was so debilitating. It was difficult to walk. Sitting was impossible. Just doing everyday tasks was excruciating. And emotionally, I was just in so much suffering because my life had just turned upside down overnight. You know, fast forward to the fall, we're at like September, October, and I'd seen a handful of doctors. I had a Pilates business at the time and I had to close it. I ended up seeing a dermatologist and they decided to review the original biopsy slides by a dermatopathologist, so someone that really specializes in skin. And it turned out that the autoimmune disorder that I was previously diagnosed with was never there. So I had been taking these super strong steroids and that caused me so much pain that now the pain is feeling like it's starting to spread. I'm having sit bone pain. I'm having hamstring pain. I'm having this allodynia on my legs, like so severe that just a blanket touching me was just inducing this ridiculous amount of pain. And I was just a mess, like physically and emotionally. And even though the autoimmune was ruled out, which was very good news, and I had stopped taking the steroids, I still had these symptoms and I was still going to doctors just trying to figure it out. So, you know, now we're at like January 2013 and I've seen like 8 or 9 gynecologists, a naturopath, handful of doctors, you know, went to the Mayo Clinic. And I had one more appointment scheduled at the University of Minnesota with a physician's assistant who specialized in treating women with vulvodynia. So, but you know, after you've seen so many doctors and you've been misdiagnosed, you really start to lose hope in the medical community, right?
And I think that that's an interesting thing to bring up too, is that people that I interview on this and people that kind of go through a lot of this stuff, especially if they can come out the other side okay, is that they've probably seen a handful of doctors or 12 or 20 or 50 or whatever doctors. But, you know, after doctor number 3 or 4, you sort of do walk into every appointment thinking, I feel like when you schedule the appointment, you think this is the silver bullet. And then as you're entering the office, like the office of where the doctor is, you're thinking, this ain't going to fucking work. Is that kind of how you're feeling?
Of course. Yeah. You almost become numb. You just start to tell your story and you're just, you know, so almost so passively, cause you think, yeah, just forget it. They're not going to know, you know, I mean, that's all the evidence you've had, right? Is no one knows. And that's really how I felt going into this appointment, but it actually ended up being a turning point. So, which was good because she was like the first professional that truly listened to my symptoms, listened to my story. And after she examined me, she immediately knew what was wrong. So, which is so crazy to me, even as I think about it. So it turned out that I did have an infection. I had a very common vaginal infection that happens often after a pelvic surgery. So remember, I had that surgery in March of 2012. What's so crazy to me is that the treatment for this was just a simple antibiotic. You're talking just taking penicillin.
Yeah.
So, you know, after that misdiagnosis for 8 months that, you know, all these doctors missed, it was cleared, you know, with penicillin, but the problem was the pain remained, right? So my brain had already formed these pathways over those last 8 months. So I'm still kind of at square one, right? Like still trying to figure out, okay, so how do I deal with this pain? And so now I'm moving on to seeing physical therapists and pelvic floor PTs and postural restoration, doing all of the structural things, right? To eliminate the pain.
Did she comment on that at all, by the way? Okay, we caught it. We caught the root of this is the infection, but the pain remains. And so it's now locked into the nervous system. Did she have any commentary on that?
No, you know, it's so funny because there's still this disconnect. I feel like, at least at the time, there's this disconnect between how your emotions, right, and your nervous system, and how that's impacted with pain. It's like, I know that there isn't a lot of education on this for a lot of professional or mainstream medical doctors.
Yep.
So no, I mean, she did encourage me to see a pelvic floor PT, but a lot of this, like most of us that get to the other side, figure this stuff out on their own, right? And so I, all of these steps, right, were bridging me to, you know, what was to come, which was good, but, you know, having to go through it is so challenging at the time. But I knew, even going through these PTs, there was something missing, right? Like, I kept thinking to myself, this can't be so hard to figure out,
right?
Right. That was this thought. I'm like, I have to be able to figure this out. So we're talking like, I really went the physical therapy route for a long time. So I met January 2014, and that's, I was doing like a typical internet search, and I came across a post on some forum, and I can't even remember what it was, but they were talking about John Sarno and his book Mind Body Prescription. And I just had this feeling like, this is something I really need to explore. And so I went right to Amazon, looked up the reviews, and my mind was just blown away. And for the first time in a really long time, I actually had hope that I could get better. Right. So that was the time I kind of really started to research mind body syndrome. I joined TMS Wiki, TMS Help, looked into Howard Schrubner, Laura Moore Mosley. And I did continue with PT. I wasn't quite ready to give up that yet. And in fact, I went as far as flying out to California to see Stephanie Prendergast from Pelvic Pain Rehab. Stephanie's, I don't know if anyone's ever talked about her, but she's a brilliant pelvic floor PT, and she has a team of exceptional PTs. And she really one of the few that I worked with that really understood pain science, right?
Yeah.
She knows Laura Moore Mosley, and I believe now she's already worked with Alan Gordon.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And so Stephanie was a fabulous resource for me. And she was also the first person to confirm, like in person, look in my eyes and confirm that your brain can learn and unlearn pain. So that was huge. And so I came back from Stephanie, and that was when I really just decided, you know what, I need to follow, start following the advice that I'm reading in Mind Body Syndrome and stop all forms of physical treatment and just really work exclusively on this mind body piece. And so I really started to read success stories on the TMS sites, reading whatever I could on pain science, you know, on retraining your brain, on calming the nervous system. And, but I wasn't one of those people that like read Sarno's work and just was instantly healed, right? And I really struggled with the journaling piece. And I remember journaling about my childhood and just feeling more and more anxious. You know, I had been in therapy. I had a challenging childhood, been in therapy since my first panic attack at 25. But I really felt like I had moved through a lot of this childhood trauma. But it's also important to note that this was 2014. And so I'm on TMS Wiki, and a lot of the messages I'm receiving, or at least I'm interpreting, was you need to journal to find that one repressed childhood memory, sort of to release all of this pain, right? And that message just created so much pressure for me, because I had this belief that if I didn't find this one memory, that I'm going to be stuck in pain forever.
Yep.
And so I just decided at the time that I'm going to just put journaling off to the side, knowing that I could go back to it if I wanted to. But now I just needed to sort of figure out how I was going to do this without the journaling piece. And this is when I started to have a few breakthroughs. So prior to the pain, I was really active. I was teaching Pilates. I was running, and I really miss running. And one day I was reading, after reading, like, my 10th time reading Mind Body Prescription and Sarno's advice of like resuming all normal activities, I decided to say, screw it. And I went for a run, you know, because the thought of running was so enticing to me. And it was really a crazy decision, because I hadn't really moved much for like a year and a half.
Yeah.
I wouldn't necessarily suggest this to any of your listeners, but what it did for me and what I discovered was after that run, the pain didn't get worse, right? And that was proof for my brain that if there was something terribly wrong, if there was something really sinister going on, that I would have been in pretty bad shape.
Yep.
So I went back to running a few times a week, and then I started to notice that I would have less pain running than I would walking. And clearly, physically, that made no sense, yep. right? But from a mind-body perspective, yeah, it totally made sense. I was distracted while I was running. You know, my mind wasn't focused on the symptoms, but walking, I was far more aware of how I was feeling. And then it was really interesting because things really started to kind of come together more and more. And my next breakthrough, at least I consider it a breakthrough, was I realized that my symptoms would fluctuate during the day. So like in the evening, the pain was so much better. In the morning and like early afternoon, it was at its worst. And I started to look at those symptoms in a different way. I started to get curious and started to question them a little bit. And what I found was in the evening, like after I put my kids to bed, right? And my husband and I were able to like sit down and watch a show together, you know, the pain was better. And after really thinking about it, what I noticed was I had this thought at the end of the day, almost every single day, that if I made it through the day, now I can relax, right? I made it through another day, and now I can finally relax. And that thought helped me to feel calmer, and that resulted in less symptoms. Mm-hmm. And so that was really the beginning of me understanding like the power of our thoughts, right? And how they can directly impact our symptoms. And so even though I was having all these really great breakthroughs, I was still trying to figure out how I was going to use this to heal whatever symptoms I had left. Right. And I knew for sure that my nervous system was sensitized and it needed to calm down because my anxiety was through the roof. So I needed to desensitize my nervous system. And, you know, I had this previous experience calming my nervous system from panic attacks. In my 20s, I had some agoraphobia and I had postpartum OCD after my first child was born. And I was in therapy for these things using some CBT. But I was also using Claire Weeks's work.
Yeah.
And, you know, Hope and Help for Your Nerves, which TMS Wiki talks about all the time. And that book's an incredible resource, right, for learning how to calm the nervous system. And I used it in my previous experiences. So I had proof, right, that my nervous system could heal. And I knew that calming the nervous system was central to healing from physical pain. So I just sort of created this protocol for myself just based on a combination of tools from John Sarno and Claire Weeks and my personal experiences with anxiety, right? TMS Wiki, TMS Help, you know, Laura Mormels, you know, just all of those amazing people. And I just started using tools, you know, daily to kind of help calm my nervous system and retrain my brain.
And almost, it sounds like, because the journaling thing, I agree with you. I think for some people, it's a really wonderful tool and they report that as the greatest thing that they've ever done. But then I hear a lot of other people say similar to what you had said, it becomes this thing that's almost placing more pressure on them and it's not really helping them at all. And also I feel like trying to attack something that you can't even like tangibly see, or you have no idea even what the target is, basically, that it's a very helpless feeling. Whereas if we say we're trying to cumulatively chill the nervous system out, that to me, that seems like a more possible task. Does that make sense?
Oh, totally makes sense, right? And at the time, you know, it made more sense to me, and I had proof that I did it in the past, yeah. Right? So that was really helpful for me to kind of look at it in this way. And I think everyone, yeah, comes to the other side in their own way, whether it's through journaling or, you know, using more tangible tools, I guess. So my protocol, which I can share with you, you know, consisted of first of just making what I was doing a priority And which means I had to make myself a priority. You know, I'm someone who identifies with perfectionism and people pleasing. And so that was really uncomfortable for me to kind of, I needed to put aside a lot of other things that I had been doing, other, you know, activities or people depending on me. And I really needed to learn how to create this environment for myself to support what I was doing. And so that was the first thing I needed to do.
Do you mind giving an example or two? I think sometimes listeners may hear something like that, making themselves a priority, and it sounds like a big task. When I think of stuff like that, if we would have had this exact same conversation 3 years ago and you had said making myself a priority, I would have thought, like, you know, leaving the house and having a spa day for 5 hours or whatever. And I think a lot of people maybe sort of feel that way. But to me, like in my world right now, as an example, was, I think I've mentioned this before, maybe I haven't, but one thing recently I've done is, like, my part of my morning routine is getting Zoe ready for kindergarten. And I used to be the one to dress her. I used to be the one to do her hair. I used to be the one to brush her teeth. I used to do all this. But now, me staying downstairs and just, like, eating my oatmeal and sort of chilling out, listening to, you know, Drake or whatever on my Alexa downstairs and just saying, hey, Zoe, you go get dressed. And she just does it. And to me, that feels like an enormous, Eddie, you're taking care of yourself and letting somebody else handle the responsibility. And it's a very small thing, but to me, it feels like a very big thing. So can you just give a couple of examples of attending to yourself?
Yeah, well, in this sort of aspect, what I needed to do was create some boundaries, right? Like, as a people pleaser, you know, I was very used to doing things for everybody else and not for myself. So I had to say no to activities, like extra activities, really simplify my life by adding some constraint, and which was really challenging for me because, you know, I was afraid, which is very common for people that are people pleasers. You're afraid of how someone else is going to react, right? You don't want to let anyone down. So for me, it meant saying no. That was the biggest thing, and simplifying my life. So, you know, even activities, like, my daughter was in kindergarten at the time, and so they always want volunteers. And so just saying no to that. And that was hard. That was really hard for me. I mean, it was her, you know, it was her first kindergarten experience, and I wanted to be there. But I knew that if I didn't focus on myself, right, I'm just delaying, you know, my healing. Right. So I really had to, for me, it was really boundaries, really simplifying my life, and focusing on, the rest of, you know, these tools that I created. So, the other thing I did was I focused a lot on and changing my thinking about the symptoms I was experiencing. Notice I refer to them as symptoms and not necessarily as pain. I use the word pain a lot, but it's kind of changing my language, right? And my association, and so changing, that was really helpful for me, changing my thoughts, practicing, like John Sarno does talk about, practicing that belief that you can actually get better, right? Because oftentimes people are, that the thought they'll never get better, yep, can really block any type of progress. So, repeating, you know, any kind of any healing thoughts that would create a feeling of calm within me was really helpful. So, and I wasn't doing this with a lot of pressure on myself. The other big thing that I needed to do was to create, you know, more safety or feel safer, was to practice accepting and allowing symptoms to just be there without reacting to them, which can be very challenging for a lot of people, right? I think Nicole talks a lot about that radical acceptance. And so that can be, accepting and allowing the symptoms can feel very impossible at first. And so that required me to, you know, not ignore, because I know that there's a lot of talk, in the community about ignoring, right? Or fighting or, you know, those kinds of words. But those words to me felt very like resistance. And so it didn't work for me. Like fighting the symptoms, it created more tension in my body, which was the opposite of what I was trying to achieve. Does that make sense?
It does. I think actually language intertwines with what you just said too, because in a lot of ways it's like, if you're sort of going on the offense and you're saying, let's just say right now that I started having a symptom, let's say my ankle started hurting, and I can accept it and just say, yeah, my ankle hurts and it might hurt a lot, and you know, it is what it is. Or if I start having this fight, fear around it, and you're right, in the beginning it sounds like, oftentimes I think now when I see friends of mine that are in pain or, you know, different issues, my siblings, my, you know, whatever, posting on social media over and over and over again for years that something hurts and you know, this incident happened to them and all this kind of stuff. And I'm just thinking, like, gosh, like that continual language and pounding into the ground that something hurts and something is like to be afraid of over and over again. But I was there. And so I know how that feels. And if somebody would have told me, you know, 4 years ago or 3 years ago or whatever, before I read any of this stuff, that, you know, these very simple and very practical ways of thinking or dealing or reacting / non-reacting to these things is really kind of the secret sauce, like I would have slapped him in the face, right? Because it sounds,
oh, totally.
It just sounds so minute, especially if you've been like me, where like you're sitting in an MRI tube getting your neck MRI'd because you're having neurological symptoms throughout your arms. Like I had like what I feel like is very much the worst of the worst, you know, blood pooling in my hands and all this kind of stuff. And if I would have just known a few months later, like this is so driven by a dysregulated nervous system, like if somebody would have just said that to me, I would have hated them, right? So it's very challenging. So anybody listening to this that you feel as if like it, there's no way it can be that simple, I hear you and I have the utmost empathy for you, but I'm telling you what Julie's saying and the simplicity that it has behind it is certainly there.
Yeah. I mean, and it took me a few years to wrap my head around that, right? Yeah. Like, I mean, it wasn't like, it didn't just come. And I remember in the beginning, I was seeing a therapist and I was asking her, you know, how to deal with this pain. And she's like, you know, you just allow it to sit alongside you. And I looked at her and I thought, are you effing kidding me? Like,
right.
You know, because your initial reaction to any pain is to guard yourself against it, right? To tighten up against it. I mean, that's our normal reaction.
Yep.
So to encourage it or to lean into it or allow it just seems, it's counterintuitive, right? It's just counterintuitive. So, but you're right.
I mean, at this point though, like I think about it and I start to have these thoughts about other things in life that are just like, you know, the storm's coming. Like if I'm like, I do a lot of driving for work and I see way off in the distance, like, you know, these super dark clouds or lightning or whatever. And like, I'm going towards it. I can try and turn away and run away from it and do all this kind of stuff. Or I can just say, well, storm's coming. Can't do anything about it. Like that's kind of how I see a lot of this type of stuff that we're talking about now is like storm's coming. Okay. I'm not going to die. And when I get through it, I get through it. And that's the way that it is. And I tend to see that like, if I have any sort of a symptom or something pop up, like it goes away very fast with that frame of mind.
Yeah, exactly. And you're instead of, you know, kind of putting up that guard or resisting it, you're softening yourself, right? Yeah. Like that's how I look at it. And that's why like ignoring and fighting it didn't work. Cause that to me in my body, I was tensing up and I needed to do the opposite of that. I needed to make sure that any of tension in my body was being released. So that was a piece of that too. I mean, allowing the symptoms to be there is releasing tension in your body. And when we have chronic pain, what? Our bodies are tense, right? I mean, tension, myositis, I mean, we have tension in our bodies. So we need to scan our bodies in a different way in terms of where are we holding that tension? Where are we guarding against the symptoms and consciously release it?
So when did the symptoms start to unwind and, oh, this is going away. These things that I'm doing are now working and this is behind me. Like when did that happen and what was your, what sort of things were you doing?
Yeah, it took a while. So I was practicing, you know, the accepting and allowing the symptoms to be there on a daily basis. I kind of structured my day around it because my kids were in school. So I made sure I did the majority of that, even while I was like going through the motions of life, doing the dishes. I mean, I specifically remember doing the dishes, and at first, you know, when you're feeling pain all of the time, your body tenses up. You don't even realize you're tense, right? So I had to consciously re-release the tension in my body, yeah. Right? All of the time. And then again, there would be some kind of maybe a little symptom. And then again, I would tense up. And I was constantly consciously releasing tension over and over again at first. And so I did this, gosh, for several months, but I made sure I took breaks because this type of work is very active, right? It takes a lot of brain power, it takes a lot of energy. So I made sure that I would take breaks from it too, if I felt tired, and then I would just get back to it. And I
want to make sure that I clear something up about the release tension in your body, because I think I know what you mean, but tell me if I'm off. So
yeah.
As an example, I've actually been doing a lot of this lately, and I feel like it's actually helping me when I go, because I do some pretty intense CrossFit and weightlifting and heavy squats and deadlifts and powerlifting and all that kind of stuff. I feel like the tense moments in life, or even just tension in the body in general, if I go into doing a heavy squat and I'm already tense before I even do it, my power output is vastly limited. That's how I feel. But a lot of what I do throughout the day sounds very similar. Consciously, like a lot of times I don't even notice that like my shoulders are really elevated and I'm sort of walking around like, you know, that I mean, I don't know, what's a good example? I'm walking around with a shield basically all the time, but actually just like stopping and why am I doing that? And trying to have every muscle in my body progressively relax, so that way that I can do maximum power output with the muscles when I need them to do squats or to do whatever. Is that what you mean? Like consciously just chilling, making yourself a wet noodle basically?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, okay. That's exactly it. So let's say you have, you know, IBS symptoms. And you notice, like for me, with pelvic symptoms, I would tuck in my abs all the time because I was trying to brace myself, right? And so I had to consciously release those muscles because when you're tensing your body, you know, you could be thinking, oh, I'm going to heal, you know, till you're blue in the face. But if your body is still tight and tense, your brain is still going to believe, is you're still training your brain to send signals, to send pain that something is dangerous, right? So, you know, making sure, you know, scanning my body and making sure that my stomach was loose, like you said, a wet noodle, right? Like, allowing my shoulders to drop, those kinds of things. You know, you have to first figure out where you're holding that tension. That's really important. And then consciously release it. And so I was doing that basically on a daily basis. And at first I had to remind myself literally like every minute.
Yeah.
And then it starts to become more of a practice. Your brain starts to do it, you know, more unconsciously, right? And then I did that over a period of months, and I started noticing less symptoms. I started taking note of when I would have reduced symptoms, right? And I would write some of those down, and I would tell myself, kind of reinforce to my brain that I'm on the right track.
Yep.
And so it probably took for me to initially see some result. It probably took a good 2-3, like 4 months.
Yeah.
And then I had one major flare up, like in, it was like in November, right? For the holidays. And I just remember I had a twinge of pain and I panicked, right? Like a thought was like, oh my God, here we go again. That was the thought, right? And then that just created panic. And then that flare up lasted for about a month. And so then I just went right back to what I was doing, went right back to, you know, to some of my tools. And I got back to sort of my new baseline. And then it probably took another, 6 months or so before I was having more painful free days than pain days.
Yeah.
And then I had to move to desensitizing myself to, you know, neutral stimulus, like clothing, like sitting, those kinds of things. So I needed to then, you know, start working on that piece of it.
And are you still doing running and Pilates as you're doing, as this stuff, like this period of time that you're talking about right now?
Yeah, I'm still, I wasn't doing Pilates, but I started lifting again.
Oh, great.
I was lifting
okay.
a lot before. So yeah, so exercise was another thing that I needed to move through, right? Like I was terrified of exercising again. And so that was just another thing that I had to desensitize my nervous system. And so I was doing that that as well. And yeah, while I was using all this. And so it took a lot of time and patience, right? Like, so I had to really work on my patience, and because I really wanted to get better today. So I really had to focus on allowing my body to take whatever time it needed to take rather than staring at the clock or looking at the calendar. The other thing I did was visualize myself. So I'm sure that people have talked about this. So I would visualize myself doing all the things that I wanted to do. And when I did that, I was basically thinking of myself, my future self, already recovered or healed or whatever you want to call it, rather than sick. Right? So there was a lot of thought work involved in this at the time. But I was doing all of these things without really trying not to add a lot of pressure and trying to do it perfectly.
Right. I find it's interesting. I was just thinking about that the other day, where I feel like the podcast, as an example, it had sort of like, it took 6 or 7 months for a lot of people to start listening. Like I remember it took, let's see here, 9 months to reach 600 listens for an entire month. And I thought, God, that is amazing. Right. And then very quickly after that, with 9 months after that, it probably hit 10,000 that were listening in a month. And, but it's sort of hit this place of the last 4 months of kind of the same approximate number of people listening, which is somewhere between 12 and 15,000. And I always think like, it would sure be nice to get over that hump. And so should I start doing marketing material? Should I start doing this? But it's like that pressure that I just don't need. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. Because any type of pressure creates tension in your body. Right. And so I really wanted to eliminate, because when I started to feel impatient, I started to stress out about it. And that was the opposite of my goal.
And
I mean,
when it relates to healing, I've never once heard a really great pro athlete or a really great singer or a really great, think of anybody that does something really, really good. Could be just like a trade, a really great house builder. But I've never heard any of these people say that they became the best at their craft, by worrying about or having a necessity or being really uptight or very tense about their, you know, the things. There's probably examples out there that are counter to that. But for the most part, I feel like the best success stories a lot of times in really any occupation or anything out there is when people say, I just learned how to relax. Like just trust myself and trust that I just needed to chill out and just sort of be at ease with whatever it is I'm doing. But for whatever reason in this chronic pain stuff, it's totally the opposite a lot of times, where it's like, okay, I read Sarno. Now I'm journaling 30 minutes a day. I'm doing meditation 30 minutes. It becomes your job. And
yeah,
that inherently seems like it would just sustain symptoms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, and it's the energy behind it, right? Like for some people, you know, they can read John Sarno, they can do the journaling, and, you know, their thoughts and their feelings are calmer, right? And they can find success really quickly. I mean, this is what I look at. This was really fascinating to me. You know, you hear about the people that read the book and then they have success immediately. Their symptoms just go away. You know, and so what's changed, right? So they had symptoms before they read, they read the book, and then there are no symptoms, right? Their symptoms diminish. Well, the only thing that's changed is a thought.
Right.
Right? And your thoughts create your feelings. So they're feeling, oh, this is why, right? And then they start to feel calmer, and that impacts their symptoms. So so for me, the big thing was realizing how much, not just, you know, allowing the symptoms to be there, but how much how I was thinking was really impacting the pain and the symptoms. And then once I got better, I was able, it took a while, right? It took a while. And then once I got better, I went and certified for my health and life coaching certification. And the life coaching certification I went through really focuses a lot on thought work. And so that, using some of those tools, I realized that's exactly what I was doing when I was healing, right? I was really trying to focus on what I was thinking and how that was affecting my symptoms. And I'm sure you've had a few people, I think you've had a few people talk about that on your podcast too before.
Well, one thing that you said a minute ago that was very reminiscent, I was going to pipe in and ask if you listened to the interview I did with Teresa Walding and with Hannah Studley, who talked about,
yes,
they're like three principles people. Yes. Literally, it just sounds like you like you took a page right out of their book with the, you know, what happened when people, because certain people, yeah, like, there, and you can find, there's probably, I don't know, 2,000 reviews between Sarno's books, between all four of Sarno's books that are sitting on Amazon right now that say, I read the book and I was instantly better, right? And I don't know, I would venture to guess that the number of people that buy any book and write an Amazon review is probably 0.1%, maybe. So it's not very, I mean, I might have written one review of, maybe two reviews of every book I've ever bought on Amazon. So it's not very common for people to do it. And you can find a couple thousand on there. And yeah, you're right. They were sitting there. They were in horrific pain. And they read this book and they went, huh, maybe I am okay. And the nervous system just said, oh, never mind, we're good. And like,
yeah,
you know, it's not quite that simple, I'm sure, on what's going on the inside. But I always think a lot of, there's a really great Disney, I don't know if your kids are young enough to have watched this movie, but there's a really great Disney movie called Inside Out, where it's all the emotions are always sort of bickering, yep, all the time. That's kind of how I see the nervous system interacting, is it's just like a bunch of these little characters are kind of, you know, picking at each other all the time. And one is feeling despair and one's feeling sad and one's feeling, they're kind of always in conflict. But some people can just read a book and just be okay and cool with it. But I think that there is a whole nother genre that's available to people that is in the releasing tension in my body repeatedly for a long period of time, because you're now teaching the nervous system from the outside in, basically. To me, it sounds very similar to like any sort of a somatic tracking practice too.
Yes. So it is very similar to that, for sure it is, right? And learning how to process your emotions goes right in, you know, in conjunction to that. And yeah, so it definitely, and I did use some of that as well. So it was, to me, I felt like allowing the symptoms to be there was sort of this consistent meditative state in a way, right? Like I was trying to separate myself from the symptoms. I was trying to observe them rather than, you know, react to them. And I did that along with the thought work. So using all of those things together was really how I got better.
So now I'm curious, like at this point in time, it's not all that often where there's somebody that comes, I mean, you have very similar makeup to me in the sense that like you have a significant other, you have two kids, two younger kids. And I was blessed with two girls. I don't know what it'd be like to be a boy, to have a boy, but, I mean, I'm sure that the world of the people around you probably shifted a little bit as well as you sort of came out of this. So I'm curious initially, how did some of your closer relationships change? I'm sure that there were people either in your family or your close friends that saw you going through this stuff or, you know, knew that you were in pain a lot. And then suddenly you kind of had, not necessarily a rapid change, but if you spent a couple of years in pain and then in less time than you were in pain, you unraveled and were fine or came out of it. Mm-hmm. I mean, you would think that people would notice that. I still get occasionally questions of people that knew me when I was really in kind of the dark hole and was just like, how'd you come out of that? And depending on who they are and how much I think they'll listen, I'll tell them. But sometimes I don't. So maybe talk about some of the evolution of some of the relationships that you have had, people that were there and around when you had pain, and then people that were around when the pain was gone.
Yeah, well, it was interesting because we live in a neighborhood that's we're really friendly with our neighbors. And so that really stood out the most because we would get together all the time. And when I started having pain, I just was emotionally, I was just a mess and I would isolate myself. Right. And that was really, really challenging. And what I noticed was hard too for some friendships was people really had a difficult time understanding how I was feeling, right? They really had a hard time relating to it. And I think a lot of people, when they experience any kind of chronic illness, at first people are very concerned, but then you're still in pain, right? You're still experiencing this and it's months later and people don't really know how to relate or how to help. So they kind of distance themselves. So I experienced a little bit of that. And then I had isolated myself for a while. I was really struggling and that was kind of a habit I would do when I had anxiety in the past. And so I was really working through this on my own. And then as I was starting to come out the other side and getting better and forming those relationships again, some of them just went right back to the way they were, like in our neighborhood. It was great. They were kind of there the whole time. And then other friendships just didn't survive.
Yeah.
Which was okay, right? And that was okay. Or they were changed. Because I think sometimes when people show up and they have so much discomfort, it's hard for others to if they're uncomfortable with their own feelings, it's hard for them to be around that. Right? It brings up their own discomfort.
Yep.
And people don't really know how to relate to it. So so some friendships did have to fall to the side. Other ones became stronger. My relationship with my husband became strong. He was amazing because many times he would have to pick me up off the floor and really be like I'm a little bit of my coach on the side and say, you've got to just keep going, keep doing this work.
Yeah.
So luckily, and that was really helpful. I mean, that was really great for our marriage, but yeah, I think it's really common for people. It can be really challenging relationships and how they change.
What, it's kind of out of a left field question, but I'm thinking about the Pilates and I'm thinking about the weight training and I'm thinking about the running. Do you feel that people that are active people, meaning like I was a CrossFitter and a weightlifter and a lot of people find me on Instagram or whatever because they're CrossFit athletes that have sustained a perceived injury and it's now been months that have gone by or maybe longer and they've been completely out of the game, shut themselves down totally, which is what I did too. And they just want to know, how'd you get better? What physical therapist did you go see? What chiropractor did you go see? What pill or supplement did you take? That kind of thing. Do you feel that... people that are athletes, people that are active that have this happen to them, whether it's back pain or whatever sort of a serious symptom it is, it could even be an anxiety issue. Do you think that they are at an advantage when it comes to getting better or do you think a disadvantage when it comes to getting better? Meaning like, is it going to be harder for them to grasp that this is kind of a simple thing? It's not easy, but it's simple. Do you think that's tougher for them to grasp or easier for them to grasp?
Well, it's a good question. And I think it just depends on the person. I think for me, having a Pilates background, which is a mind-body practice, was really helpful for me, right? So I already believed in sort of the mind-body. And so that was helpful for me. I think I think there are some people that really struggle with looking at it from that aspect if they've surrounded themselves with people that look at it from a structural perspective, right? So I think it just depends on the person. I know that some of the clients that I work with were very active prior. And some of them do struggle with it not being a structural issue. And to have a hard time adapting sort of to this idea of it being a mind-body syndrome or mind-body way of healing. And I have others that, you know, that are totally open to it. So I don't know if I could say it's one or the other. I think it just depends on the person.
That stretch of the first few days after I read Sarno's book reminds me a lot of the story you were telling about you would go on a run and you wouldn't have pain issues while running, but you would have some while walking. Because I remember by this point, I probably hadn't lifted in 6 months or so, 6 or 7 months, because it just caused way too many. You know, I'd pick up an empty barbell and I would get, my hands would go numb. And so I just stopped entirely. And when I read Sarno's book over the course of two nights, maybe three nights, and then the next day I went out in the garage. I have like a fully built out garage gym with a weightlifting platform and squat racks and rigs and all that kind of stuff. And I picked up a barbell and I did a snatch at 60 kilos, so 132-ish pounds. And I remember I dropped the bar and I was like, well, nothing happened. My hands didn't go numb, right? But then, I did a full workout, as much intensity as I could handle after being completely on the shelf for so long. But then I remember a day or two later, my daughter had a birthday party, and as guests were showing up and a lot of the kids were showing up, and she has a summer birthday. So like, I remember we got a couple of bouncy houses, and I'm trying to make sure that everybody's having a great time, and my neck and my back were just lit up. Like I wasn't lifting anything, right? I had just come off. I was in the garage the day before lifting all this heavy weight and bending my body in weird positions, and I wasn't in pain then. But now for whatever reason, like walking across the yard and showing a parent where their kid was now suddenly was making me feel. So that was similar to what you were saying, where it was almost like, you know, my detective hat came on and it was like, that doesn't make any sense, you know, at all.
Yeah. Yeah. I was able, instead of, I think I'd shifted from fearing the symptoms so much to actually getting curious about them, like looking at them in a completely different way, like starting to question them. Right. And then start asking myself, okay, why is this happening? That doesn't make any sense. And that really was helpful for me to sort of detach from it a little bit and not feel like I'm at the effect of it, that I actually have maybe some control over it.
Yeah.
Right.
I think is again, very different from trying to ignore, because it's almost like you're sort of embracing. But when if I have a twinge or something like that, I almost like belittle it a little bit at this point, where I will say to myself, that's stupid. Like, just, you know, that's stupid. And because a lot of times the symptoms are really stupid and they're not logical. And they don't, you know, sometimes they do make sense, but most of the time I find that they, you know, they don't tend to make sense. So as we wrap up in the last few minutes, I'm curious on, you work with clients, and I'm curious to know about people that are kind of in the beginning of an engagement with you, and then people that are nearing the end of an engagement with you. What are some of the things that you have them put into like a regular practice, things that they're, you know, advisements, things that you have them do in the beginning? And then as they get better over time, you know, what are some of the things that you're almost like giving them a graduation speech at the end of your relationship together and saying like, remember this, here's some things to do in case you have symptoms reappear, but ultimately you're okay and there's really no further place that I can take you, kind of thing? Because that's kind of how I see some of these client situations working. Maybe it's not like that, but when you first get somebody that comes to you, what are some of the initial things that you're saying, here's a couple things that you should do to start out?
Yeah, well, good question. So initially when someone comes, we really focus, like the first session is basically, we want to kind of have just an overview of, you know, mind-body syndrome, the brain, and how all of that works, pain science, right? And then beyond that first session, we really start to learn how to observe ourselves. We learn how to be the observer or the watcher of our thoughts, our feelings, and our symptoms, right? Because we can't change anything we aren't aware of. And for a lot of us, when we're experiencing symptoms, we're not fully aware of how our thoughts and our emotions are impacting us. So that's really the first thing that we do is focus on that observing, right? What is the story we're telling about the symptoms. And then from there, we start to work on the language, right? What language? How are we identifying ourselves as somebody with chronic pain? And what I did too when I was healing is I stopped calling it my pain, right? I stopped identifying with it. And so we start looking at that. We start working on how our relationship, like what does our relationship to the pain look like? You know, how is that affecting us? And really a deep understanding of your thoughts, feelings, and actions and how they impact your entire life and create your reality. And that can go beyond pain, right? So from there, you start working on breaking that anxiety and pain cycle by learning how to allow the symptoms to be there. We talk about their future self, right? Like where do they want to see themselves? And they learn how to build boundaries, kind of focusing on some of those typical personality traits that present with chronic pain. And then as far as an ending is concerned, it's really interesting because I feel like the type of work that I do with my clients, maybe their symptoms, right? Their symptoms dissipate. They're not having these chronic pain symptoms, but they can still use this work in other areas of their life. Yep. Right? So maybe there is a graduation in terms of the physical sensations have dissipated, but this work can continue because it's learning sort of a new way of thinking about yourself, about your life, right? And that can be used in all areas, and it doesn't have to just be about persistent pain or physical symptoms of anxiety.
Yeah, I think in a lot of ways it kind of becomes this evolution of as you kind of start to separate yourself from whatever your line of thinking or consciousness was before, I feel like then you almost start seeing the world and your world in the third person. Like a lot of times I'll see, I don't know, it's tough. It's like the pain for me really got kind of bad at 30, like at 30 years old. But when I think back to from the period of time when I was 27 until I was 31 or 32, it literally feels like a dream at this point. mm-hmm. not even just the pain part, but just the everything that I was doing, situations I was reacting to, how seriously I took everything. It doesn't even feel real. Like if you were to tell me that this is the things that I would get so worked up about 5 years ago, I would just like, it's tough for me to even recognize. So I think it does become this full, you know, much more of a full approach than just, oh, I don't have a backache anymore.
Right. Yeah. I mean, just think of the growth that people go through when they go from severe, you know, debilitating pain to no pain. There's so much growth in between, and it's really learning. To me, I think of it as like a higher level of consciousness, you know, if you want to call it that, right? You know, if you read Eckhart Tolle or some of those thought leaders, Byron Katie, it's learning to separate yourself from the story, right, that you're telling about the pain, about your marriage, about relationships, whatever it is, right? You're learning a new way of thinking about your life. And to me, that's so powerful because it's not just for pain or chronic illnesses. It can be for anything.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely. You know, it's interesting. There are, I don't know, I think it's 70%, 65 to 70% of the listening audience is women for this show. When I get some of the statistics back at the end of every month, and very likely there is somebody listening to this right now that a lot of what you said, particularly with the, you know, the women's issues, probably resonated with some people. So, you know, somebody sitting here right now thinking to themselves, I would love to talk to Julie. How do they reach you? What, you know, give us some plugs on where they can find you.
Sure. So you can find me on Instagram. So my handle on Instagram is Julie O'Brien Coaching. You can DM me there. You can find me on my website, which is www.julieobriencoaching.com, or you can email me at julie@julieobriencoaching.com.
Awesome. Julie, thank you so much for spending an hour.
Thank you. This was amazing.
Yeah. I can only plug your Instagram so much, but I'm saying like I learn something new or think about something in a different way just about every time you post something. So kudos to you.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I appreciate that. Thank you for everything you do too.
Yeah, I appreciate that as well. So, all right, Julie O'Brien, thank you.
All right, take care.